her ears, and is struggling desperately to defend the little ground she holds. She lacks the spiritual insight to know that her best defense is an offense, and she is too languid to put the knowledge into effect if she had it. If we are to advance, we must have power. Paganism is slowly closing in on the church, and her only response is an occasional drive for one thing or another, usually money, or a noisy but timid campaign to improve the morals of the movies. Such activities amount to little more than a slight twitching of the muscles of a drowsy giant too sleepy to care. These efforts sometimes reach the headlines, but they accomplish little that is lasting and are soon forgotten. The church must have power. She must become formidable, a moral force to be reckoned with, if she would regain her lost position of spiritual ascendancy and make her message the revolutionizing, conquering thing it once was. Since power is a word of many uses and misuses, let me explain what I mean by it. First, I mean spiritual energy of sufficient voltage to produce great saints once again. That breed of mild, harmless Christian grown in our generation is but a poor sample of what the grace of God can do when it operates in power in a human heart. The emotionless act of accepting the Lord practiced among us bears little resemblance to the whirlwind conversions of the past. We need the power that transforms, that fills the soul with a sweet intoxication, that will make a former persecutor to be beside himself with the love of Christ. We have today theological saints who can and must be proved to be saints by an appeal to the Greek original. We need saints whose lives proclaim their sainthood, and who need not run to the concordance for authentication. Secondly, I mean a spiritual unction that will give a heavenly unction to our worship, that will make our meeting places sweet with the divine presence. In such a holy place, showy sermons and streamlined personalities will be all out of order, a very grief to the Holy Spirit. And the emphasis will fall where it belongs, upon the Lord Himself and His message to mankind. Then I mean that heavenly quality which marks the church as a divine thing. The greatest proof of our weakness these days is that there is no longer anything terrible or mysterious about us. The church has been explained, the surest evidence of her fall. We now have little that cannot be accounted for by psychology and statistics. In that early church, they met together on Solomon's porch, and so great was the sense of God's presence that no man durst join himself to them. The world saw fire in that bush and stood back in fear. But no one is afraid of ashes. Today they dare come as close as they please. They even slap the professed bride of Christ on the back and get coarsely familiar. If we ever again impress unsaved men with a wholesome fear of the supernatural, we must have, once more, the dignity of the Holy Spirit. We must know again that awe-inspiring mystery which comes upon men and churches when they are full of the power of God. Again, I mean that effective energy which God has, both in biblical and in post-biblical times, released into the church and into the circumstances surrounding her, which made her fruitful in labor and invincible before her foes. Miracles, yes, when and where they were necessary. Answers to prayer, special providences, all of these and more. It is all summed up in the words of the evangelist Mark. And they went forth and preached everywhere, the Lord working with them and confirming the words